I was, I think, inspired to give a sermon today regarding a subject that is something I really never desired to talk about. But in the midst of changes, what may be considered drastic changes in Western culture and fashion, in an age where fashion and culture can be deemed bizarre and offensive to many, but yet others consider it acceptable and normal, I think this is a topic that's something that all of us can and should consider, and we likely all do consider in many ways, probably each day of our lives, making choices about what we are going to wear, what we are going to purchase, what we are going to do as far as our life and lifestyle and how we go out into the world, how we are going to appear to others. And this question has come up a number of times over the years, and it did come up recently, which led to the message today. You know, at one time, skirts that were worn above the knees were considered to be risque and something that was only worn by women of the night. And you know what kind of women I'm talking about. But now miniskirts today are all the rage. In some cases, the smaller, the better. Tattoos were once something that was associated with gang members or perhaps bikers, you know, Hell's Angels, perhaps worn occasionally by people that served in the military. But today, tattoos are considered works of art. It's considered fashion today to wear jeans down below the waist, to where your underwear is hanging out. It's considered fashionable today for men to wear earrings, for men to wear blouses, I have seen, men to have their hair done up in a bun like that worn by women. And it's equally fashionable for many women to have hairstyles of a man, to even dress like a man, sometimes as a display of their homosexuality. And it's considered a culture change and becoming more and more acceptable by many people to have a variety of body piercings. So in many ways, in our age, it's fashionable to greatly exceed the bounds of moderation, which was once defined as moderation, in order to draw attention to one's self, even if it can be considered by some and is considered by some to be something offensive, something that is not respectable. And so should you and I accept the kinds of changes, the fashions that are being propagated today and in culture? Where do you and I draw the line when it comes to some of these things? How do we, as people of God who strive to be morally upright in every way that's possible, how do we decide whether or not to join in with some of the current trends when it comes to clothing, when it comes to hairstyle, when it comes to tattoos or body piercings? Does God even care about such things? Because some people will say, well, that's small fish to God. He doesn't care about that. He only cares about the more important issues. But does he only care about those things that are deemed by some to be more important? Well, let's go over to Psalm 33 to begin this subject. Psalm 33. The scriptures say that God cares about everything. It says that they say that God cares about the birds. They say that he is aware even of how many hairs are on each of our heads. And they say that God cares about the world, that God cares about everything in the world, for God so loved the world that when he made it and he fashioned everything in it and how it was to look, how it was to function, he said, it is very good, or was very good. And this means that he cares about everything, doesn't it? It means that he cares about everything that we do, whether it's clothing, whether it's hairstyle, whether it's tattoos, or body piercings. And one of the scriptures that indicate this, I think very well indicates this, is Psalm 33, verses 13 through 15, where it says that the Eternal looks from heaven, that he sees all the sons of men from the place of his dwelling, and he looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. He fashions or works with their hearts. individually. Why? Because he considers, they say, all their works. All their works. Not just some or a few, but all of their works. And so God considers everything that everyone does. And he is particularly concerned with those people that have been exposed to the truth, those people that have been taught the truth about morality, about common decency. In fact, that's the reason why we are here today. That's the reason why we are keeping the Sabbath here and across the country, many people joining us on the phone or on the internet. It's the reason why we strive to obey God, because we know he cares about us and we care about him. We want to be a part of that future kingdom of God that he is beginning to build. And he is using humanity to do so. And so this means that God is very concerned about the things we do, and he is very concerned about the reasons why we choose to do the things that we do. He's concerned about the reasons why we choose to color our hair in a certain way or to participate in all of these things, these trends, these cultural aspects of our lives that we call also fashion. So when we study the history, for example, I'm going to talk about piercings for a little bit. When we study the history of piercings, whether of the ears or of other parts of the body, earrings have been used by many different cultures, many different people all around the world for thousands of years. And in the last several centuries in Western culture, it's widely been considered something that only women have done, to wear earrings. But the last few decades, we've seen that piercings in the lip, in the nose, in the eyebrow, or the belly button, that these things are becoming more and more common, commonly seen as we go out shopping in the stores, as we go to places of business. Even we see them in the schools of America, and even in the workplace, we might see them, people wearing them. And some even become addicted to such things as they reach for more and more ways to be unusual, to be out of the ordinary, and they might try to further enhance themselves by getting more piercings and different piercings, something that's likened to getting tattoos. People often get addicted to these things, and they'll get more different, more extravagant, colorful tattoos. And so people have come to pierce their tongue, to pierce their neck, to pierce their head, or their nipples, or other unmentionable parts of the body. And something else that we see a lot of, I think, today, or more and more of, at least, is stretched earlobes. This is something that's quite unusual. In fact, the ancient Egyptian pharaoh Tutankhamun is the first known ruler that we are aware of to be depicted as having stretched earlobes. It's something that we've also seen long depicted on pagan idols of the false god, Buddha. It's also depicted on the idols that were built on the Easter Islands. And we understand, in fact, that many ancient pagan cultures are known to have practiced earlobe stretching, as well as having a variety of body piercings. And so in many ways, we can see that these types of things are related to culture. But does this make it okay? Does this make all types of body piercings okay for us? You know, though body piercings seem to be quite common throughout the history of mankind, I think a question we should ask is, have they long been something that are common to God's faithful people? Do we have examples in the Bible of people with tattoos or various body piercings? Let's go to Genesis 24 to begin to look at that question, to consider that question. When Isaac was of age, he sought a wife. Abraham had sent Isaac back to Abraham's homeland, a place called Ur, to find a woman that was of the same ethnic group, that is, a woman of the Hebrew people. That is whom Abraham desired Isaac to marry. And so when Isaac neared the land of Ur and came into this land, he came to a well. And at this place, there was a woman that came out and caught his attention. You could say love at first sight. He was very intrigued by this woman. She came out and she offered to help him, to fetch him water, seeing that he had been on a long journey, and also to water the pack animals that Isaac had brought with him, carrying all of his goods and even gifts to the woman that he sought. In verse 22 of Genesis 24, it talks about the culmination of this first meeting here of these two individuals, Isaac and Rebekah. And it says, "So it was when the camels had finished drinking that the man," speaking of Isaac, "took a golden nose ring weighing half a shekel and two bracelets for her wrists weighing 10 shekels of gold." And so it is that Isaac pulled these items out and gave them to this woman. And it talks about a nose ring. Some translations call it an earring. It is the Hebrew word nezem, which basically refers to a piercing or a ring put in the face, likely more 99% of the time in the nose. And later, a retelling of this meeting of these two individuals in verse 47 of this same chapter, Isaac says here, "Then I asked her and said, 'Whose daughter are you?' And she said, 'The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him.' And so Isaac put the nose ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrist." And this was a sign of honor. He was honoring her in this way. And so something to consider is that these people who Isaac came to meet, they were of the same ethnic group of where Abraham came, and therefore of Isaac. But they were not of the same culture of Abraham and Isaac. Think about it. Abraham was told to leave that place, a place that is called Ur of the Chaldeans. Now, the Chaldeans were also known as who? Anybody remember? The Babylonians. They are associated with the Chaldean people. And so it is that Babylon and the Babylonians were the source of all pagan mystery religion. And that is why God told Abraham, leave that place. I'm going to make of you a great nation. You're going to start a culture and a society someplace else. Not here. Not in the heart of paganism. And so while this first example here of Isaac giving Rebekah an item that is a body piercing, a nose ring, it doesn't say that nose rings are wrong, but it does indicate that the oldest culture that we know of that wore them, although considered to be Hebrew people, they did not practice the true faith of God. Otherwise, God would not have told him to leave that place. He wouldn't say, leave those faithful people and go start somewhere else. And so let's look at another example, Genesis 35. Genesis 35. Later, long after Jacob was born to Isaac, Jacob committed himself to be faithful toward God. He eventually lived with the family of Laban. Drawing a blank there. And he served 14 years, more than 14 years actually, but it was a minimum of, we know, of 14 years, we don't know the exact number, in service to Laban, so that he would gain the hand of a woman who he greatly loved, Rachel. So he married Leah and then Rachel, and the account of Jacob tells us that Laban worshipped a number of false gods, a number of idols he had. He highly regarded these idols. And we see later that Rachel even stole some of those idols from her father Laban when Jacob left with his family. And for what reason Rachel stored them, we do not exactly know. It's likely because she thought they were of value and she could sell them or trade them later as they were going to establish a community someplace else. But apparently, there were some other people among Jacob's family and among Jacob's servants that also had idols in their possession. Now, Jacob wanted to be sure that none of that paraphernalia came with them when he went to establish a people living under God, when they went to build a new community in another land. In Genesis 35, Verse 1 says this, that God said to Jacob, "Arise and go to Bethel, and dwell there, and make an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother." And Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, "Put away the foreign gods that are among you, purify yourselves, and change your garments. And then let us arise and go up to Bethel, and then I will make an altar there to God who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me in the way which I have gone." And so it says, they gave Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their hands and the earrings that were in their ears. And Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree which was by Shechem. And so it appears here that there were a number of individuals that had idols in their possession, and they had Nizam, which refers to widely nose rings, but in this case it says in their ear. And they were associated, the reason they turned them over to Jacob is because these items were associated with idolatry. Now the reason, of course, could be that some of these items were fashioned to resemble perhaps some false pagan deity, some false gods, or maybe they were made in the shape of a symbol that represented something of a pagan rite or a belief, you know, kind of like we can see the same thing today in many pieces of jewelry. We see jewelry that's fashioned after the image of a cross or a pentagram or some mythical, mystical creature that people wear in their ears or around their necks. But when Jacob's family, the point is, when Jacob's family and their servants committed themselves to live by a certain standard here, it says that they put away all those things that were related to idolatry. Now again, these verses do not say, they cannot be used to say that earrings are wrong, that nose rings are wrong. But a question I think we should ask, instead of asking if they are wrong, is, are they right? So let's go to Judges to look at another example here, the book of Judges. Judges and chapter 8. Gideon was a man who is considered to be a faithful individual to God. He was not perfect in all of his ways, but he did mature, and he is considered one of the champions of faith in the scriptures. God called him to do a great work for the nation of Israel, and it took a bit of convincing, but Gideon followed suit. He did what he was supposed to do, and he was honored for it. Now, after this monumental event of Jacob and just 300 individuals slaying thousands of pagans, soldiers that were trying to invade and take over the nation of Israel, the people wanted to honor Gideon. They wanted him to be a judge or even a king to them. Now, Gideon would not accept such a role. It was not his place, but he did have a request of them, which I think he did this in order to hopefully satisfy their desires for him to be honored as a champion, a leader among the people. And Gideon said this in Judges 8 and verse 24. He said to them, "I would like to make a request of you, that each of you would give me the earrings from his plunder," because the people plundered the pagan soldiers that they had conquered, "the earrings of his plunder, for they had golden earrings, because," it says, "they were Ishmaelites." So again, this doesn't say that men wearing earrings is wrong, but we see that the men who fought against Israel were known to wear earrings. It was commonly known. Golden earrings, and they were members of an ungodly tribe and a people that did not obey God, therefore an ungodly culture. And so, we come to another question. It's probably the question I had already asked. But are there examples of faithful people of God, men in particular, wearing earrings? Are there examples? Well, there is an example in Exodus 21. There's actually two examples. One of them I don't think is appropriate to use because it says to break off the earrings of your sons and your daughters and to fashion a golden calf out of these things. And so I don't think we can use that to say, oh yeah, men can wear earrings. Well, if it's now it's associated with a golden calf, perhaps that isn't something positive. And the next example I'm going to give in Exodus 21 isn't necessarily something positive, but it is an example of people of God wearing earrings. So Exodus 21, these are some of the judgments that God gave to the people of Israel concerning what the laws, the statutes that would be instituted when they came into the land, and even before they came into the land. These are laws that the people were to observe. And so in verse 21, in verse 1, it says, "These are the judgments which you shall set before them." This is a law concerning servants. It says, "If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go free and pay nothing. If he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him." So in other words, a servant doesn't mean a slave in a bad way. People think that the term slave is always something bad. No, these people were treated fairly and respectfully. "If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be your master's, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant plainly says, 'I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free.'" In other words, he likes his job. He likes living here. This is something, it's not like I hate this. No, this is what he wants to do. "Then his master," if this is the case, "then his master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him after this forever." Now, to those of you who are not aware what an awl is, this is an example of an awl. This is one I got out of my toolbox. It's a very handy tool when you're trying to find a hole in a wall and you just can't get the item there. You kind of stick it in and straighten it out. In any case, it has a very sharp point. Some people might be familiar with an ice pick. We don't see much of those anymore today. But this is what is being talked about, but not exactly like, this is quite wide. You stick this through somebody's ear, it's going to cause some serious damage. But this is what is being referred to, something like this, that would be used to pierce the individual's ear. Now, after you pierce their ear, you can't just pierce it and be done. It's just going to heal up afterward. Wouldn't even be able to tell that it was pierced within a matter of weeks. So something would have to be put in its place. You would have to put a ring or some kind of earring in its place. And this would be a sign, therefore, that this individual was a permanent slave or servant to another person, another man, or another family. And so it was a symbol, therefore, of lifelong ownership, which is technically a definition of slavery, but not slavery in a bad way. These people were treated respectfully and honorably, and they were given a fair wage and a decent food, a decent place to live. They were treated kindly. However, it was not God's intent that people would desire to be slaves, permanent servants to other men. And those slaves were common, I think. They were common throughout the nation of Israel, and they were treated fairly and with respect. God desired for his people to be free people. Free. He brought them out of bondage for this reason, out of a life of slavery, where a place where slaves were mistreated. And for this reason, he'd also designed the year of release. We see that he designed the Jubilee, so that people would not be destined to a life of slavery if they did not want to live that way. And so if someone really wanted this, though, if somebody really desired it, God made an exception. He made a way for it to occur. They had to wear something, though, for the rest of their days as a sign of their ownership. And the act was to be done publicly, says to go before the judges. It was to be done publicly, but it was not necessarily something that was honorable. It wasn't like people were rejoicing, yay, he has chosen to be a slave for the rest of his days. No, but it was something that it was allowed. And so we see, therefore, if men, women, were permanently slaves, they wore these earrings, a particular, maybe even a particular type of earring. And so, therefore, free men of Israel did not wear earrings, because it would be a sign that they were a slave. And who would want to go around saying, oh yeah, I'm a slave, I'm a servant, if they're not? Ezekiel 16. There is another example that some have considered, and in particular was brought to my attention recently, that some people consider this to be a positive use of a nose ring. And this is an example where God uses an illustration describing ornaments that adorn the nose or the ear of a woman to illustrate or to portray his blessing upon the nation of Israel when he brought them out of Egypt and gave them wealth and wonderful things and the land of Canaan. And so he uses this symbolism here as it describes him cleansing and decorating, adorning, if you will, a woman. And so Ezekiel 16 in verse 9 says, "Then I washed you in water," talking of washing the filth of the idolatry of Egypt that they came out of. "I washed you in water. Yes, I thoroughly washed off your blood, sacrificing to idols, and I anointed you with oil, and I clothed you in embroidered cloth. I gave you sandals of badger skin. I clothed you with fine linen and covered you with silk. I adorned you with ornaments and put bracelets on your wrists and a chain on your neck. And I put a jewel in your nose, earrings in your ears, and a beautiful crown on your head. And thus you were adorned with gold and silver, and your clothing was of fine linen and silk and embroidered cloth, and you ate pastry of fine flour and honey and oil, and you were exceedingly beautiful and succeeded to be royalty, the greatest nation that the world has seen as far as morals go." And so these were terms that God used according to the culture of that age of the Middle East. And he used these terms where badger skin shoes or nose rings and earrings were things that were often worn by people that were affluent, people that were important, people that were highly regarded. And so they're descriptive terms that God uses describing the good things that he had given the nation of Israel. But does God's description here mean that we should wear badger skin sandals? Does it mean that we should have nose rings? Or that men should wear earrings? Well, let's go over to Deuteronomy 22. Further back, Deuteronomy 22. Though the Bible does not say that men wearing earrings or women wearing nose rings or people getting tattoos or having wild hairstyles, blue, green, or fashioned in extravagant ways, that it's a sin, the Bible doesn't say that directly. But in our culture, we see that many people associate such traits, such fashion statements, if you will, that they associate them with people of low character. I mean, think about it. Do we see the President of the United States with green hair? Do we see congressmen and senators going around with nose rings or having stretched earlobes? Do we see CEOs of respectable or reputable companies brandishing all colorful tattoos up and down their arms? We don't see that, do we? Because the standards of the society that you and I have been raised in point to that to being something that's not honorable. It's not respectable. And standards are changing. People are wanting to change it to where things like that are considered respectable and honorable. Just like people want us to consider homosexuality just as moral as heterosexuality. that men should be allowed to marry men, and it should be just as honorable as men marrying women. Should we accept those things? No, obviously not. We should not accept those things, even though they have been going on for several years now, perhaps decades in some cases. I mean, there have been a lot of changes in fashion and in culture over the last several decades. Our society has, in fact, been degenerating for several decades, for the last 50 years even, beginning with the baby boomers of the 60s. I think it goes back to the 40s, the 40s through the 60s. And then Generation X, we see that, part of my generation, millennials. And now we're entering Generation Z. It's kind of interesting that it's the last letter in the alphabet. What's next? I don't know. Maybe it's time for Christ to return. I'm not saying that's a sign, but things seem to be getting worse and worse to the point to where how much worse can it get? Because things that were once considered offensive to most people in the United States of America, habits that were things that were done by people of low character, these are being redefined today. People are wanting us to consider them to be normal, to be acceptable, and displays of modern culture. Now, at the same time, we see other things happening, don't we? We see things like truth becoming subjective. Oh, it's just a matter of opinion. Nothing could be further from the truth. Truth is truth, no matter what source it comes from. It is truth. It's either truth or it's not. It's not a matter of perspective. We see people redefining right as being wrong, and wrong as being right. And so these are things, these are changes that we see happening in our age, in our culture. And the question we should ask ourselves is it something we should participate in? Should we be a part of it? Western culture for the last several hundred years or more has widely viewed earrings as being something worn primarily by women. Men who wore them were viewed as ruffians or rebellious persons, people of low character, as I had said. And in the 1970s, we saw a great number of men beginning to wear earrings, and this was at first a sign of homosexuality. Later, in the 1980s, people began to say, well, it's only if you wear an earring in the right ear is a sign of homosexuality. If you wear it in the left ear, if it's a man wearing it in the left ear, it's something different. And maybe in some ways society did view it as something different. Not that it really was, but it was viewed as something different. But a woman's use of earrings has long been deemed something that's acceptable, something that it decorates her nicely. It's something that is respectable in the culture of our age. But should men wear them? Should men have earrings? Well, one answer can be derived from the fact that they have long been considered effeminate. And if we look at Deuteronomy 22 and verse 5, it says that a woman shall not wear anything that pertains to a man, nor shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all who do so are an abomination to the Eternal your God. Now, God doesn't describe exactly what things he is talking about. He doesn't say this type of dress is that of a woman and this is that of a man. No, because there are differences in society. In some cultures, in some societies, men wear these long garments that look a bit like dresses. They're not like women's dresses, but they're long. They're, you know, it'd be unusual to see that in our culture. So God doesn't put exactly descriptive terms on what is a man's and what is a woman's. But frankly, be honest. Is it hard to figure it out? It's not hard to figure it out, is it? We know. We see it. We know exactly, oh, that looks like something a man wears. That looks like something a woman wears. And he's saying, don't mix the two up. Don't start try to switch gender attributes here. That's confusion. God, who created the world and created men and women, said, I'm not the author of confusion. Don't do that. I didn't design you to be that way. Another scripture that could be considered, and this is in regards to hair, various hairstyles, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 14 through 15, he says, doesn't even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a dishonor to him? Why? Because that's what a woman has. most women, many women, have long hair or longer hair than men have. But if a woman has long hair, he says it's glory to her. It's beautiful. It's something that she should have. And I think men would agree. Longer hair and the hairstyles of women are attractive. They should be. That's the way they were designed. And so Christian men should not wear things that pertain to a woman. We're not to have long hair. We're not to put it up in these man buns that we see many people doing today. We're not to wear dresses. We're not to wear makeup. We're not to wear high heels. Silly, isn't it? It sounds silly, but some people like to do that. Some would say that the feminine connotation to earrings, well, that's no longer applicable today. It's become acceptable now to wear earrings, for men to wear earrings. But is this change in gender traits something that we should accept and go along with? I mean, I know we have to live here. It's not like we're going to go out and start pointing out people that, you know, that we work with or that we see in the, you know, in the store, in the workplace, to say, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. That's not our place. But my point is, should we choose to participate in these things? Should our men, should our teenagers, should our boys begin wearing things that once pertained only to women simply because there is a culture change now? Is this something actually that God would approve of? Would he say, yeah, it's okay. Go ahead. 2 Timothy 3, to help us find the answer. The question of piercings, of tattoos, of clothing, and wild hairstyles, these things are not directly, specifically, I should say, addressed in the Bible, except when it comes to those things that pertain to a man and those things that pertain to a woman. But consider that even though they are not mentioned specifically, they are addressed. They are addressed by either what the written word of God implies or what it relates to us in principle. And so in the past, we see that people would dress up to impress. What do many do today? They dress down and hope to impress individuals. You know, ragged, worn-out jeans at one time was something that was, you know, a sign of poverty. It was, you know, people that either didn't care or could not afford to have newer or nicer clothes would wear such things. It's not that they are wrong to wear if you don't have anything else, but my point is today people pay $50 to hundreds of dollars for one pair of jeans that looks like you tied it to a bumper and you dragged it around town for a couple of months. Wow. People pay extra, actually, extra cash for those for many pieces of clothing that appear to be ripped or torn or soiled. In 1984, fashion writer Elizabeth Sporkin wrote this in the magazine USA Today, national magazine, a once very respectable magazine, and she said this. She said, dressing like a bum is now chic. Fashion errors are now fashion statements. Anti-fashion, she said, is in. And she went on to describe how many popular, well-known designers who admitted that they were being inspired to create clothing and fashion styles. They were inspired by street people. By people who didn't, you know, could not, they didn't know any better. They just mismatched different types of clothing or wore whatever was ragged and worn out. It didn't really matter to them. And she said this, she said, it's so ugly, it's hip. It's so bad, it's good. Have you heard that expression before? Yeah. So it became fashionable in the 80s to look bizarre. And designers began to call the bad good in this way. And in so doing, they began trends that continue, that have continued unto this day, and in some cases have become even more extreme. And so along with this, think about other expressions that people have used, many of mostly of the youth, but other older folks have used expressions like, oh, that's wicked, that's bad, that's dope. And what do those mean to many people today? It means it's good. Wicked is good. Bad is good. Being dope, which refers to a drug, actually, that is frowned upon, that's something that's positive in today's culture. But is that God's way? Should that be our way? 2 Timothy 3 speaks of this as Paul prophesied. In many ways, Paul is considered a prophet. And he said this, well, that's 1 Timothy. 2 Timothy 3, he said, know this, a very familiar scripture. We've heard it a lot in the last several years, that in the last days, perilous times will come. Men will be lovers of themselves, seeking attention, ego, seeking to feed their ego and their pride. Lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. And this can be translated as disobedient to their forefathers. Unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good. Yeah, because good becomes what? Bad. Traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure, more or rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, meaning they think they are righteous. This is good. This is what America was founded on. Nothing could be further from the truth. Having a form of righteousness, but denying God's power. And this can be translated, denying his authority over their lives. Who are you to tell me what to do? How to dress? What to wear? I'll do what I want. And God says this, from such people turn away. Why? Because they're going to lead you down a wrong path. Well, you might think it's pretty benign to do such things, to change your clothing, to be wild in your hairstyles, or to get body piercings or tattoos, but this starts you down a path to other things. Some people will say, no, it's never going to happen to me. How many people in times past have said, not me. It won't happen to me. Surely it then happens to them. So as these things come to pass, we might tend to minimize such things like body piercings or tattoos or wild hairstyles or the way that we dress. But if we ease up on these issues, if we give in, if we compromise our standards, this can allow for other things to creep in. It can. Because this is how it works. Satan doesn't dump it all on you at once. He gets you to accept a little bit. Then a little bit more. Then a little bit more. Then a little bit more. Until we've accepted quite a bit. Because as the old saying goes, if you let the nose's camel into the tent... I'm sorry, nose's camel. if you let the camel's nose into the tent, it's not long before the whole camel is in the tent. And then how difficult is it going to be to get that camel out of there? It's an expression. It's an idiom. It bears truth because it relates that small, seemingly benign things that we allow in our lives, that we allow ourselves to do, or a decision that we might make, that this can, usually will, lead to larger, more serious consequences down the line. So in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 6, Paul said, for this, of this sort, people who try to convince you to compromise are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded with sins, led away by various lusts. And so we can't be led away. Don't be led away. We can't be deceived into thinking that all of these cultural changes and these fashions should be accepted as long as they are not specifically named. in the Bible. As long as it doesn't violate the Scriptures, we can just go along with those things. Well, guess what else doesn't violate the Scriptures? Smoking cigarettes. You're not going to see a Scripture that speaks out directly against smoking cigarettes, but in principle, it does. It tells you to treat yourself well, to treat your body like a temple. I mean, to take care of it. And you become a slave. If you don't, you become a slave to something else, whether it's smoking cigarettes or marijuana, other drugs, other things can fall into that same category. And so there are decisions that you and I need to make at times. We have to evaluate situations. We have to use wisdom when making life changes, when making decisions in our life of how we are going to dress, what we are going to wear, what we are going to do with our bodies. And when it comes to the young folks out there that are listening, you have to allow your parents to make those decisions for you right now. Don't fight them on it. It's just going to make your youth a struggle. You have to allow them to make these types of decisions until you are of age and you can make those decisions for yourselves. And then hopefully by then you will have gained enough understanding and knowledge that hopefully you'll make wise decisions. Because that is what your parents are trying to do for you, to help you to learn to make wise decisions. And in all these things, your parents, we are to be using the Scriptures as a guide to the decisions that we make. And so Paul said this in 2 Timothy 3, verse 13. Let's go to verse 14. He said, "But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures. They have been taught to you from a childhood, because they make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." And then he says this, he says, "All Scripture, all books of the Bible were given as inspiration of God. They are for your good, not for your harm." God isn't trying to take away your fun. He is trying to give you life forevermore. Pleasures forevermore. Not something that's limited in the limited years that we have in this world. So they are profitable, he says, inspiration of God, profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, and for instruction in righteousness. And so exactly what is appropriate regarding dress, regarding body piercings, regarding hairstyle, these things fluctuate from society to society. They fluctuate from century to century or millennium to millennial. It changes from time to time. It does. I'm not trying to say it doesn't change, but God's standards do not change. His standards don't change. And so some societal changes that we might see happening around us that are different, some of them are not wrong. At one time, in fact, earrings on men, nose rings, tattoos, and the such, they may have meant a few things. Today, people would say, well, there's all kinds of reasons why people get them today. Nonetheless, they are associated with something else. Earrings on men, for example, were once associated with homosexuality. Then they were associated with rebellion, with the punk rock scene, and such things, if you might let me put it that way. I don't know how else to describe it, because I'm describing a variety of cultural fashion changes in society. Such things, frankly, I think are just plain vanity, if we're honest about it, if we are honest with ourselves, because people desire to decorate their bodies in different, abnormal ways. Why? Why do we do it? It's for attention. It really is. We might say, oh yeah, we like those things. We just like the way it looks. But really, okay, why do you like the way it looks? Is it because you want to be different? You want other people to look at you and go, whoa, that's different. Whoa, look at that. It's attention. It really is, I think, when you come down to it, seeking a little bit of attention. And I know this from firsthand experience. I am a part of Generation X. I was a part of the punk rock scene when it started in this country. I had earrings. I got my first earring at 16 years old. And I dressed like a punk rocker. And I hung out with those people. Actually, in the community that I lived in, there was very few, if any, of us. But my point is, once people started getting into that scene, other guys started getting earrings. And then I wasn't so different anymore. So I got two. Two piercings in one ear. Now I'm different. But then other guys started getting two piercings. Well, you know what I said? I've had enough of this. And I could say, oh, I just like the way it looks. But then I got three more. Five earrings in one ear. Who's going to outdo me now? Because I'm going to be different even among the people that are different. Why? Well, you can use the excuse that you like it. You like the way it looks. But frankly, it's attention. People want the attention, and so they get all kinds of tattoos. They dye their hair blue or green, or they have body piercings because they want people to go, whoa, and watch them as they walk by. Did you see that? They like the attention. I think that's really, in many cases, what it boils down to. But is that something that we should seek? Should we do it for vanity's sake? Should we do it to be abnormal or a misfit of society? And even if the abnormal then becomes normal, something that society accepts, should we desire to fit in? To fit in with a culture that is morally declining at a rapid pace? Should we want to be a part of that? You know, my wife brought up something to me when we were still dating. I thought it was very interesting because she saw a lot of her friends, her girlfriends, getting tattoos. And they all started doing it. They all wanted their own little unique tattoo. And she thought, you know what? I'm going to be different by not getting a tattoo. And I thought, hey, that's really honorable. That's a good thing to do. Very few, I think, would make such a choice. In any case, let's go over to 1 Thessalonians 5. Back a few pages to 1 Thessalonians 5. Now, we know that the Church of God and we should not connect ourselves with any particular political party. But, you know, honestly, those people who are considered to be conservative in this country are, to a degree, more relatable to us. We can understand that most of their values more than we can the liberal values. And we do not see people that would call themselves conservative displaying tattoos or having nose rings or dyeing their hair blue or green. Conservative men are not wearing their hair in a bun. You don't see CEOs, as I had mentioned before, of respectable companies having their pants way down below their hips so that their underwear is hanging out. You don't see that type of thing. And the reason is because those behaviors, those fashion statements, if you will, are associated with a sense of indecency. And so that is not how we want to be viewed, is it? We don't want to be viewed or put in that same category as people of low character, because this is not how God wants us to be viewed, as people that lack respect, therefore undeserving of respect. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22, Paul tells God's people to abstain from every form of evil. And many translations, I think, put it rightly, to abstain from every appearance of evil. And so therefore, even if it technically is not wrong, it is not specifically stated in the scriptures, it doesn't say, thou shalt not pierce the ear of a man. It does not say, you shalt not tattoo thy body. It doesn't say, you shalt not smoke a cigarette. But it does say this in principle when it comes to the various cultures and what is deemed to be respectable and what is deemed to be not. And so, therefore, those are some of the things that I think you and I should refrain from doing. Now, Christ, he said this. He said, let your light so shine before men. And then he went on to say that they may see your good works. Why? So that they can glorify God. Not to your glory, but to the glory of God, who gave you the standards by which to live. Now, when he said to let your light shine before men, he was not talking about the glimmer of a belly button pierce. He was not talking about brightly colored hair. He was talking about respectable behavior. Respectable behavior. Because when we appear otherwise to people, when we appear unrespectable, I think that's a word, it's not to God's honor, it's to his dishonor. And we don't want to dishonor God. I know we don't. None of us wants to dishonor God. In fact, these type of behaviors, some people consider them to be offensive, especially when it might cause them to lower their standards. And so, well, I want to talk about this for just a moment, Luke 17, about the influence that we might have on other people. It's something that you and I need to consider if we're to let our light shine before other men and women to, so that they can see our behaviors and say, hey, that's attractive. That is respectable. That is honorable. And it will influence them. And we see that in the Church of God, it's no secret that there are people in the church who have forbidden their sons to get earrings. They have not allowed their daughters to pierce their face or to get body piercings or to get tattoos or to dye their hair blue. They don't allow such things because of their negative associations. And there are biblical principles we see for their decisions, for parents' decisions. And so if those people see us doing such things, could it cause somebody else to then lower their standards? Lower their standards. And that lowering could lead to something far worse than a piercing or a tattoo. Now notice what Christ said in this regard. He said in Luke 17, verses 1 and 2, he said to his disciples, it's impossible that no offenses should come. And in other words, you're going to sin. It's going to happen by accident, hopefully. It's going to happen, but woe to him through whom they come. In other words, woe to those people that cause other people to sin. Woe to them. It would be better for them if a millstone were hung around their neck and thrown into the sea than he should offend one of these little ones, causing other people to sin. This is very offensive to God. And so Paul even gave an example in another place of not eating meat before vegetarians, if vegetarians thought it was wrong to eat meat, and he wouldn't do so in their presence. And so we see then that there is this principle of it's better to act for conscience sake. It's better to act for conscience sake than rather to act according to our ego or to what we want personally. Because once we begin to sear the conscience, other things will follow. It's trouble once you begin to sear the conscience. And so what we should do is desire to have good works, because the works of a person that respects God and respects his principles, those are the things that are really beautiful. Those are the things that are really valuable in this life. A kind, a humble, a morally upright individual who has the character that God describes in the Bible as being golden, golden character, instead of a golden body piercing. That is what God desires his people to have, far above decorating their bodies. And you don't have to turn there, but I'm going to read 1 Peter 3 and verses 3 and 4, I think are a couple of scriptures that are very appropriate for this message. And these scriptures specifically are talking about women, but I think there is a principle in this for both men and women, where it says in verses 3 and 4, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and humble spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. These are things of great value. And so you and I, we have been exposed to the truth of God. Many of us have entirely committed ourselves to live by that truth. We have made a covenant with God in this commitment that we will live by his standards. And for those of us that have children, we have committed ourselves to bringing our children up in the way that they should go, so that when they are grown, hopefully they will not depart from that way, or at least have it as a reminder in the back of their head of how they should live. And like Jacob, therefore, we should take those things of this world, the idols of this world, that we have picked up along the way, and we should bury them. Bury them under the terebinth tree, those things that are not of God, because society is continuing its downward spiral. And if we give in here, if we give in there, here a little, there a little, when is it going to stop? Will we stop? Will we stop when we once begin to compromise our standards? Where will we draw the line? Will we use the excuse that, well, the Bible does not specifically say, so it's okay. We'll just go ahead and go along with it. Or will we look to the principles of the Bible to give us guidance in this regard? Because Paul said this in Philippians 4:8. He said, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of a good report, if there is virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, focus on these things. Focus, set your heart on these things that are good, that are pure, that are virtuous, that are praiseworthy. You know, I gave a sermon several weeks ago about social distancing and a biblical principle behind social distancing. So why don't we distance ourselves from the attributes, from the behaviors, from the fashion and the culture changes of this world that is not in line with the principles of God? Why not? Why don't we do it? And while we cannot say that earrings on men and nose rings and tattoos and wild hairstyles, that these things directly violate the scriptures because they are specifically named, we can't say that. But we can say that they are spoken of in principle. And so, if you don't believe so, well then for conscience sake, for the sake of other people in the church, I would ask you to not bring it here. For the sake of other people, you know, focus on something else. If you do choose to do it, don't be an offense to others. Because something that causes another individual to sin is highly offensive to God. And we don't want to offend God. I know none of us do. Even if some of us might participate in those things. And I'm not pointing anybody out in particular. It's not my intent to point to something somebody might be doing here or in another church of God that I've heard of. It's just that these are principles, I think, that are helpful to all of us. Because like I said at the beginning, these are things that you and I deal with every single day. And we are going to continue to deal with. So let's make the right choices. And let's distance ourselves from those things that are an offense to God.